Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to NaNoWriMo Every Month. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 20 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and other things, and I am your guide on this journey to use NaNoWriMo to level up to professional output levels. Welcome to The Questions, Episode 95. Today, Sergeant Mike asks, I write military science fiction, though this question would apply to fantasy as well. I am having trouble making my various alien species have speech patterns that sound different. What advice can you give on this topic, without requiring the Tolkien-esque creation of new viable languages, such as Elven? Which Elven do you mean? Do you mean Sindarin, or... Anyway, that goes to show you what kind of a geek I am. So, what we're talking about here is actually a broader topic called character voice. Character voice is made up of a bunch of different things. It's made up of your character's education level, of their ethnic background, of their accent, of their personal experience, all sorts of things. They all go into character voice. It's a very complex, wonderfully textured type of thing that you can get into. Now, I should say that there are many successful writers who do not give a good goddamn about character voice. All their characters talk the same, and they seem to make it work. Me, I'm a big character voice guy. I really love the texture of languages and speech patterns and whatnot. So I've got a particular way that I approach character voice if I'm not immediately hearing it in my head. If I'm immediately hearing it in my head, I just go with it. If I'm not immediately hearing it in my head, what I'll do is I'll sort of, to make an analogy to music, I'll build an instrument profile. I'll look at what I know about the character. I'm like, okay, this character is in the theater, so they will know a lot of Shakespeare. Or this character grew up in a religious household, so they'll know a lot of Bible quotations, even if they don't know where it came from. This character comes from New Zealand, so they'll have this kind of slang that they'll use. They're well-educated, or they're poorly educated, so they will have profanity that falls along these lines. And, you know, and just sort of build things up in layers, like you would programming a musical voice in a synthesizer. And I build things up in layers until I get the unique instrument that's that character's voice. The alien race, that's just another layer to those character voice dynamics. First of all, your aliens, if they're speaking English through a translator, that's going to maybe have a different effect than if your characters learned English through a course. If they learned English through a course, there are going to be particular ways that they all misspeak. If you've ever known someone who's, say, first-generation Russian, there are particular ways that the Russian language fails when translating into English. One of the most obvious is that Russians will tend to use the word convenient to mean proper, because convenience and propriety in Russian are two meanings of the same word, where in English they're completely different concepts. So a Russian telling you not, or that they're not going to do something because they don't think it's proper, might tell you it's not convenient, when they mean, I don't think this is proper, so I'm not going to do it. So you'll have language mode failures like that. You'll also have word order idiosyncrasies. Yoda is a great example of a word order idiosyncrasy, where just parts of speech are flipped around because the native language has a different grammatical structure from English. Another that you get are implied articles. A lot of languages have implied articles where we have a, or the, or some are our big articles. So I can have a book, I can have the book, I can have some books, or I can have a lot of books, or I can have all the books. Those are all articles. There are a lot of languages that do not have articles. They have implied articles. They do what's called declining their nouns instead. It's the noun equivalent to conjugation for verbs. Where, like, if you have the word for mother, the word for mother, when you're talking about my mother, has a different either beginning or ending,
or accent than the word for mother if I'm talking about your mother, than if I'm talking about his mother, than if I'm talking about her mother, than if I'm talking about the all-mother goddess of the universe. The central part of the word is the same, but the ends of the word change depending on the context and meaning of that particular usage of that particular word. And it changes in every sentence, depending on the function that that word is serving in that sentence, in the context of the subject that the speaker is speaking about. Nounal declension is a feature we do not have in English, and it's a feature that most other languages do have. Actually, we do have some moderate noun declension, but it's kind of esoteric and it doesn't make any sense. Whereas other languages follow very strict rules about noun declension. The reason that English sort of eats all other languages is because English doesn't have any good set of rules. Generally speaking, the earlier you get in any language, and there are exceptions to this past a certain point in development in the past, because languages will start very simple and then they will get very complex, and then they get very, very simple. But the earlier you go back on a near-term historical time horizon linguistically, the more complex language gets. Partly this is because language co-evolves with social structure. So when you get back into a feudal era or a more formal religious era or whatnot, the complexities of the language get more and more important because the status that the words and the declensions and conjugations connote are much more important to the social fabric. And you have a lot more status information that has to be communicated with every very short part of speech. But anyway, one of the reasons that it takes longer to say a lot of things in English than it does in a lot of other languages, because we use more words, rather than declining our words, we pack our words in certain orders in order to create meaning, where in other languages, in most other languages, they will pack all that meaning into the form of the word itself, and the words themselves are much more malleable. All of this is to say, if you're wanting to create the convincing artifice of alien speech patterns, you could do worse than to learn another language. And you don't have to learn it really deeply. Just, you know, pick two or three languages, take a summer, and study the grammar of each for a couple of months. Because what you're looking for is not to become fluent in any other language. What you're looking for is to understand the grammatical structure of how languages other than English work. There's three or four major language families on the planet. There's a couple dozen minor language families on the planet.
Wait, three? Okay, hold on here. Someone with actual linguistics training needs to step in here before it goes completely off the rails. So, hi. There are dozens and dozens of language families recognized by comparative linguistics. What Dan is probably talking about are the macro families. Think of it as the phylum of language categories, which groups together various language families that seem to be related. The macro family groupings are much less agreed upon by linguistics than the language families, but there are currently somewhere between 3 and 10 proposed macro family groupings. So, carry on.
They all treat the function of words differently, and that affects the way that their speakers have to learn and interact with the weird, sprawling, multiglot, language-eating language like English. And alien races will have the same kind of thing. The language structure will reflect their social structure. The things that are important in the language to make it understood will be the same as the things that are important in the culture on some kind of analogous level. And the things that are different between their culture and the culture that is speaking English with them, or at least the culture that gave rise to the version of English that the people they're speaking to are speaking, the differences between those cultures' social structures and priorities are the things that will give them the most trouble bridging the divide. So if you have a highly gendered society, they're going to have a lot of trouble speaking English, because English is a very non-gendered language. The fact that we use he as our generic pronoun is almost the only gendered thing left about English. If you go back to Middle English, it's much more like German or French, where every single noun has a gender. And so there's a few places this still shows up in English, like we call ships she. It's because in Latin, ship was a female-gendered word. And the gendering of words is complex and gets into mythopoeic stuff and all sorts of things that would take me hours to go through. But the genderedness of the language, the formality of it, the tenses that they use, Latin has 6 tenses, ancient Greek has 7, and both of those languages are directly conjugated. English has 2.5 directly conjugated tenses and a cobbling system with which we work out to 12 tenses. The way the culture thinks of time will also affect how their language translates into English. And then there's the cases, the nominative, the dative, the accusative. All of those are things that are implicit in words and have different linguistic functions in other language. And in English, we barely have cases at all. Again, in English, we cobble together cases on the fly. So much so that we don't even teach English speakers what cases are linguistically, whereas in other languages, you have to learn what a case is when you're learning to write the language formally, or you can get in a lot of trouble. Anyway, I don't really know quite how to advise you particularly, but in going through all these different aspects of language, I hope I'm giving you a feel for the kinds of tools you've got to work with. And you've got these tools to work with without becoming a linguistic expert. Which I know sounds a bit weird, since I've been going on about this for 15 minutes now. It might get shorter as I do the edit, but I've been recording this for about 15 minutes, talking in heavy jargon about the way language works. But I'm not a linguist. I've learned pieces of about 5 different languages. I speak only English fluently. In fact, I speak only English at all. I can understand some French, some German, some Latin, and some Greek, and little bits and pieces of a couple of Nordic languages. And that's about it. And so all of this stuff is stuff that I've picked up in the casual study of other languages through the years, because I find them fascinating. I just don't find them compelling enough to spend my time learning to speak them instead of learning to speak my own better. And that's basically because I'm a writer and I'm lazy. Oh, and I also learned Klingon at one point, which actually is a language and has all these things I'm talking about. But this is all stuff I've just absorbed through casual. It's very, very easy to get a superior knowledge of linguistics to mine with about a year's worth of moderately devoted study. So don't get intimidated. You don't have to be very good at this to be very convincing, because nobody's very good at this in the English-speaking world. These are categories that we don't think in because our language doesn't need them. But if you're wanting to do what you're talking about, getting more familiar with basic linguistics probably will help a lot. And becoming familiar with the way languages interface with each other and the way they fail to interface with each other. And frankly, you can learn a lot about that without any formal study, just by talking to first-generation immigrants a lot. And since you're in the military, if you were deployed, you will have had exposure to this through locals when you're in country. And you just didn't realize that that's what was going on. And if you didn't, you may actually still have access to some of the Army's linguistic resources, even if you're not active duty. I'm not quite sure how that works. I used to know. Some things have fallen out of my head. But you can get all this stuff on YouTube, too. Linguistics is a fascinating field. It's not as difficult as it sounds. And now I'm just grasping at straws, so I'm going to cut it off here. I really hope that helps. I wish I had more concrete advice for you, but I hope this helps inspire you towards something that's useful. And I'll see you tomorrow. NaNoWriMo Every Month is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at NaNoWriMoEveryMonth.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. NaNoWriMo Every Month is copyright 2016 by J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions and is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivatives License.